This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every single week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Now, Matthew, apparently you've heard that leaked sound clip of me criticizing Klingons as being kind of like cardboard cutouts on The Next Generation, and I see you've brought your posse today to set me straight.
That's right, Chris. I've invited the guys from Earl Grey to come over and really set you straight on Klingons. And and so, like I said, I did bring my magnificent three here because it's the power of three that really matters. And we've got the guys from Earl Grey with us to talk about Worf, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, I'm glad to follow up. Of course, we were on Earl Grey to talk about Worf as a character on TNG, because we're always talking about him as DS9. So today we're joined by Philip Gilfus, Daniel Prue, and Darren Moser of Earl Grey to talk about their view of Worf on DS9 after seeing him on TNG for all those years. So guys, welcome to The Orb.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Why didn't we get as cool of a nickname as the Soulless Minions of Orthodoxy? I want to know that.
Well, you know, you haven't spent enough time in the entertainment chamber.
Okay.
Also, your cells haven't been enlightened enough, but I gave you the power of three. Come on.
That's true. It was cool. It was cool.
Daniel, it's not often that people from the Enterprise get an invitation to come aboard Deep Space Nine. So let's be thankful.
Just be thankful that we didn't keep putting you off like Sisko put off Picard.
That's true.
Over and over. He's waiting for you on the Enterprise. All right, I'll go see
him. Yeah, I'll get to him when I have a chance.
I'll get over there.
I know Sisko doesn't like Picard, but I have to think that he becomes bald later on because of how fashionable it is with Picard. Mm-hmm. So,
and Matthew. Just
well, I mean, they became closer. I mean, you know, they at the end of Emissary, they patch it up. You know, it's cool.
But Matthew, I want to. We are here to defend you, but instead of a blood oath, can this be like a pinky swear oath? That's kind of, that's a little extreme for
but
me.
But when Klingons do pinky swears, they cut their pinkies first.
Man. Yeah.
And then then they hook them. Yeah.
Do they have a redundant pinky?
oh, wait, guys, you mean we're not doing the hand-cutting blood oath? Oh,
sorry, Darren. Yeah, you should have held off on that,
Darren,
for a minute.
Darren, I want you to put some ice on that and wrap it up, and you're going to need to have your wife take you to the hospital.
I'm going to need a dermal regenerator real bad right over here, guys.
Those Bajoran nurses.
Darren, listen, never cut your hand until Admiral Ross tells you.
Exactly.
But at least we know I'm not a changeling.
That's true.
let's move on.
So we're here to talk about Worf today and get a TNG perspective on the character of Worf and how he evolved on Deep Space Nine. Of course, he was introduced in Way of the Warrior, but where I want to really start isn't with his introduction on screen, but with the lead up to that. What I'd like to know, at least from those of you who were paying attention at the time, I know, Daniel, I don't know how old you were when he came on. And I'm not saying that to be facetious or anything. You're a lot younger than me, so... How old were you at that time?
I laugh because my fellow co-hosts love to tease me about my age. let's see. This was 1993, 94?
Zygote?
This would have been 95.
So I would have been nine.
Nine, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember because I wasn't really, like, I was watching Deep Space Nine in syndication at the time. So mm-hmm. It wasn't like I was paying attention to exactly what was going on.
Well, that's why I ask, because what I would like to hear your thoughts on is the lead up to this. So for those of you who were actually following the media and the Star Trek discussion on the bulletin boards, I know for me it was CompuServe at the time. And I remember being really not very keen on the idea of Worf coming over to the Next Generation. I felt like, well, this is going to be a gimmick so they can try to pull in more viewers. I don't really want to see Worf on Deep Space Nine. You know, he's a Next Generation character. I want DS9 to be its own thing. And today I look back at it and I think that this was a brilliant move and that DS9 is really where Worf belonged because it allowed them to grow that character in a way that they couldn't do in the episodic nature of TNG. So thinking back to how I felt about it at the time, I mean, Philip, how about you? What were you thinking when they were talking about bringing Worf over?
Well, I remember, and in fact, I still have the newspaper clipping.
What's a newspaper?
Storage. Yeah, I know. that where it, the announcement, there was like a little blurb like on the inside of the front page of the paper where I was living at the time in Virginia. And it was like, you know, Lieutenant Commander Worf going to be now coming on Deep Space Nine. I'm like, oh, okay. Now, I have to admit, I know I'm on the orb, and this is the quickest way to get thrown into a Cardassian interrogation room. But I'm one of those people who went from TNG, stepped away for a while, then came back to Voyager. And so, but with Worf, I was one of those people who was like, oh, well, maybe I need to go check this station out now. And, you know, Worf the Defiance and all, you know, which I know. I'm one of those people. But so it, to me, I was that stereotypical TNG who was like, well, maybe I'm going to watch now.
Well, I watched DS9 from the beginning. That's definitely a show that my dad and I, we would sit down, you know, every week and catch the new episodes and definitely bonded over that. So when Worf was being brought over, I mean, they had also brought over, you know, Miles in the pilot, obviously, and that was, which worked because he wasn't like one of the main seven. I mean, it was like, oh, we get to see more of this character that we've seen very little of. But Worf, I mean, he's been in so many episodes and is heading on to, you know, being the most episoded character. So, but I was excited for it. I felt, you know, they had built up for it, but they had also built up for it, I think, slightly in the show. I mean, we were singing Klingons more often and we were singing, you know, other things going on. And, I mean, yes, Way of the Warrior is like, we need a Klingon. And it's like, who walks through the door the next moment? But I think it was well done. And I don't remember too much about the media buzz in the real world, but I was happy to see Worf, come and back on screen. I mean, it's definitely one of my favorite characters.
Now you have me flashing back to like Death Wish and Voyager, like humans, who would have more experience with humans? And then Q appears, it's like Klingons, who would have more? And then like suddenly like, you know, like Kern shows up. You're like, no, that's not it. Who else has experience with?
Alexander is like a teen.
Yeah, I was thinking Alexander. He's there.
No. Anybody else. Please.
It just reminds me, like when I think of it, especially as you said, Chris, now it was a brilliant move and it worked out wonderfully because of the writing. It just reminds me how much fans don't know anything when something happens. Like we automatically think this is going to be the worst idea ever. I mean, like Michael Keaton is Batman, terrible, don't do it, you know. Like you know, very rarely are fans, I think, right in hindsight. Writers tend to know what they're doing most of the time. There are a few places where they don't. But on a whole, you know, if you give it a chance, it's probably going to be a great idea. And fans are so very single-minded that we get in love with whatever it is that we have and feel like it always has to be the same. And yet a shakeup can be the best thing that ever happens to it. And I don't, you know, Worf coming to Deep Space Nine, did it have to happen? No, but the studio wanted it. It happened. And the writers found a way to take that and make it really work for that show.
No,
crazy. And I think take a character and take him from TNG, where shows happened to Worf, but they weren't usually about him personally, I don't think. Like, it wasn't as personal, and they really took that character and kind of made him a Deep Space Nine character. I don't feel like you don't bring him in and think, oh no, he's gonna stay this, mm-hmm. you know, he's gonna stay TNG. No, they really do make him their own.
All right, well, let's talk about the actual introduction of Worf to the show. So, Daniel, I'll go to you first for this one, since you weren't really paying attention as a 9-year-old to what was going on in the media and on CompuServe and Q-Link and AOL or whatever was around then. But you watched Worf on TNG, and then you get to DS9, and then we have the Way of the Warrior, and Worf arrives on the station. So what are your thoughts on seeing him actually walk on to Deep Space Nine?
I'm glad that we're doing this episode right now because, as I mentioned, the inside of the orb, the other side of the orb, I guess. I don't know what you'd say. Well, as we talked about
the other side of the orb. The other side of the orb. A lot of stuff happens on the other side.
Gamma quadrant.
Yeah. There's a door on that side too that kind of hidden. You have to know you have to know the secret tap to open it. Yeah.
As we were talking about there, I just last night, you know, I'm halfway through season 4, I guess it is. And so I'm just getting into Worf on Deep Space Nine. And Way of the Warrior is really interesting to me because, and forgive me, this may be an unpopular opinion here on the orb, but I don't like what they do to the Klingons this season. Like, I feel like it's completely contrived to make them bad guys again for this purpose of bringing Worf in. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, I don't feel like they're a threat at any point, and they never actually become a threat at any point. So I feel like it's just like a reason for Worf to show up. But the Worf character works to me right away. Like, as soon as he steps off the thing and he's talking, he's interacting with all these new people, and especially the scene with him and Jadzia and Kira works instantly. Like, even the setup to that scene where it's him and O'Brien and Dax, and he just throws the dart through the dartboard. I love it. I love that entire sequence. I think it's great. I like all the character stuff. And then as a TNG fan, I can look at this and say, okay, you know, if I'm going to just look at this episode, I can see where they can maybe... They obviously respect the character, and maybe we'll see something that we never would have seen on TNG, and that's totally okay with me. I'm totally willing to watch it and see what happens. So,
well, it's interesting what you say about the Klingons. I think as you go along, you'll find out why they're being portrayed that way. It's not quite as
I know. Like, this is just my rewatch, so I'm aware of it, and I understand how it fits in the greater narrative. Like, it makes sense to me, but to me, it's just in the same way that we talked about on that great show you have on the network, Earl Grey, that I don't care about Klingon episodes a lot on TNG. I'm still kind of bored by them on Deep Space Nine as well. And so I don't care. Like, they're not the bad guys.
What I think is interesting is that if they hadn't decided to bring Worf back and put him on Deep Space Nine, the role that the Klingons play in Deep Space Nine itself may have never happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The entire series, not just his character, but the entire series could have been extremely different if Michael Dorn had not agreed to come and play Worf on Deep Space Nine.
But I think that's the core of my problem, is that it feels like that entire setup is just to get Michael Dorn on the show. To me, it doesn't feel like a natural thing for all of a sudden the Klingons to decide that we're sick of peace after 80 years, now we want to fight everybody. Like, that's what doesn't gel with me. So that's my problem, is why.
What do you think, Matthew? I see you like pondering this. So.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what Daniel's saying, and like, I don't want to like just jump on it because I'm thinking about his perspective and trying to see where he's coming from, and I can I can understand even still like that you could have that perspective that it does feel truncated, like we have to create a story to we have to get Worf on. But when I'm thinking about the just kind of the deeper narrative that they do create, that they use it as a way to play into the way that the founders are manipulating everyone. And to me it makes sense because we've already seen that in the Dias cast with the way that they've been playing with the Romulans and the Cardassians. And so they need to find a way to break up the lovey-dovey nature of the Federation and the Klingons and create an imbalance there. And they also need to find a way, they want to find a way to create imbalance with their Cardassians again as well, because they're trying to make this as easy as a takeover as possible. So when I think about all the story elements that are playing in here and the way that the founders are just, you know, using everyone to their advantage when they don't even know it, I kind of think it's brilliant. The Klingons were going to always have to play a role because if they're going to go with the Dominion War, the Klingons are going to be involved. But they're just not going to be involved maybe like
I mean,
this.
It's possible that the Klingons wouldn't be. So, yeah, I think that what Daniel says is true, and it's how I felt at the time, which I said up front, that they did decide to bring Worf on, and they did create the situation with the Klingons as part of bringing him on. It played out brilliantly. I think that we might be giving the writers too much credit, though, to say that they had always planned it that way. You know, I think it was sort of a
I don't think this was a plan at all. I feel like they were like,
I know you don't,
son of a, we have to do what?
Yeah.
I really do think they felt like that. So,
well, we know that, you know, part of the storyline got pushed a season because of Worf coming on. I think they did a great job of taking that and running with it and making it look as if it all, you know, it turned out brilliantly, like this is the natural thing you would do. But I could certainly see a Dominion War happening without the Klingons. The Klingons might, as long as the Dominion didn't attack them, they might just, you know, go, hey, we can go and take over all these other planets and make them part of the Klingon Empire while the Federation's tied up with those guys over there.
Now, do you, Chris and Matthew and everyone else, but did y'all get this feeling that when Worf was introduced, and I'm, it's a bad analogy, but I'm going to try and do it, the way that some Voyager folks felt when Seven was introduced. Like, did you feel like, are they saying something's wrong with our series? Like, we don't need to be fixed. Why are you having to introduce something new? We're fine the way we are.
I didn't feel that way. No.
I guess maybe I was old enough by the time Voyager brought on Seven to realize they were trying to fix something, with especially with the Borg and everything, and like they were trying to fix that show. That's how I felt as a viewer of Voyager. And maybe it's just because at that point I was a little bit older, and I wasn't quite as cognizant of that. Maybe being the perspective with, you know, Deep Space Nine and bringing on Worf, because I wasn't old enough quite to kind of get that understanding of Hollywood. Whereas as I really got into Star Trek and everything and paying attention to what was going on in fandom and all that, and even just being a little older and being able to figure out the show a little bit more. Yeah, I didn't with Deep Space Nine, but I think that was just because of my age. Yeah.
That's an interesting question. In a way, though, Philip, do we disagree that Worf and Seven, both of them, kind of actually did fix those shows? Like, aren't those shows infinitely more popular post those characters' introductions than they were beforehand? Like, people love Voyager. Well, you know, Deep Space Nine, it's not known for seasons 1, 2, and 3. It's known for the Dominion War arc. I mean, whether or not it's directly related to Worf or not is a separate question, but it's more popular with Worf than without, and the same thing with Voyager, right? It's more popular with Seven than without as well.
Is this, and I don't know if this is controversial, you know, I hate to come on someone else's show and say this, but like, I like what I've felt or heard, and again, you can tell me I'm completely 100% wrong, that this is in any way a point of view that, like, oh, Deep Space Nine, you know, after the Defiant and Worf, that's when it got good. It's sort of like the whole, like, after Riker got his spirit, that's when TNG got good, which, you know, I, of course...
That's completely true, Philip. What are you talking about?
Niners would dispute as well, as far as that whole introduction, but I always felt like that was kind of a vibe of like, which again, I'm doing my DS9 rewatch now, and I'm at the end, end of season two, and I can start seeing DS9 become on its own, not that anything wrong with one or two, but like now it's sort of like having its own elements. Like, oh, I could see like the Maquis, things are starting to really become, this is their point
of view.
You're
finally moving along home, Philip. You're finally moving along.
I don't think it's that bad as people say.
Well, see, that this is the case with every series. I see, you know, TNG, they need about three seasons, they settle in. DS9, three seasons, they start to settle in. Voyager's the same way, which is what bugged me about Enterprise. Everyone thought was supposed to be perfect right out of the gate. People say, oh, by season four, it was getting great. Like, yeah, just like the four series, the three series that came right before it.
Well, and I mean, too, the anomaly was the original series where, you know, it, everything was great that first season. I mean, it just was an amazing show, season one and most of season two there. Fantastic, brilliant, amazing happenstance.
Yeah, they did. Oh, they did.
Their budget was being slashed as they went along.
Exactly.
Whereas the other show's budget was being increased as they went along.
That's because the anti-time works normal.
Right.
We can't figure out why the budget is smaller in the future and larger in the
it's
past.
It's a high budget.
I blame Q.
I do think one of the things that you see in Deep Space Nine, too, why they kind of progress to the Deep Space Nine that we all know is that the studio stops paying attention to them because Voyager comes along.
That was important.
And they start to be able to do whatever the hell they want on that show. And that's really what creates... I think the brilliance of it is because they become a serialized show for the most part. I mean, they have their standalone episodes and you can pop in and out, but for the most part, there's a story thread that's really running through that. And it's because the studio just isn't paying attention. And as they always said, you know, by the time we got to doing a lounge singer from the 60s, we knew we could do anything we wanted to do.
Right. No one said anything to us.
Exactly. So, but I do think that they're, the character of Worf, to kind of bring it back, does bring some great character development for all of the characters.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the characters that really benefit are Dax. I mean, her character really comes alive when she has a Klingon with a bad attitude to chase after.
If you know what I mean.
And, exactly. And I think some of the other characters do as well. I think Sisko kind of has somebody else to kind of bounce things off of, and they have a great relationship. I think that really works. And so kind of wanted to get into that with you guys. What are some of the ways that you kind of see Worf meshing with the DS9 crew, maybe as in ways that he didn't on TNG or did? What do you guys think?
Well, I think one of my... And I'm not great with DS9 episode titles and all that, but I think one of my
it's Latin, Philip. It's Latin.
I know. In sic Antonius tantum, when Worf is talking with Odo about, you know, he's like, you know, things in the station, and this is not how we did things on the Enterprise. And then Odo,
yeah, I know that one. The one where Worf complains about things on the station.
Yeah, that he's been holding there the whole time, just waiting for Worf to walk in. And also, Odo isn't mean about this, because I think I used to remember the scene that Odo was being mean, but then I rewatch. I'm like, no, Odo's actually being very nice. He's like, what about this, you know, when the Ferengi took over the Enterprise and da 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 da.
Yeah. How many times was the Enterprise taken over by an alien intelligence war?
Yeah. And Odo's like, just, you know, I'm not trying to make things difficult for you, Commander, but I, you know, this is a different way of doing things, you know, here on the station. This is a different, you know, if they cannot do this on the flagship of the Federation. And so I think the struggle, which we talked about in Earl Grey with Worf, you see that first season of Worf. Because, I mean, think about it from the character perspective. You know, he's lost his family, hand quotes, after generations. You know, that whole way of the war, do I want to be in Starfleet? Why am I wearing this uniform even though I wore the other one in generations? There's a whole problem there. But anyway, and it comes down to who am I? And then, okay, well, am I in this new family? I mean, I've only been on the same ship for like 7.5 years. Not to learn new people's names. I know one of them, Miles. But anyway, you know, and you see that sort of identity and the adjustment, and can he adjust to this space station, which is very different, very chaotic, right? Because Worf is kind of like likes order and simple things. And so I think that's sort of a good introduction for that first season or more, you could argue, I suppose, of him getting used to it.
Yeah. One of the interactions I really liked with Worf was with Sisko. I think it's a very different dynamic than with Picard. Picard, I don't know, I'm going to say Picard had like a lighter touch, but I mean, there's some great, great scenes where Sisko challenged Worf. Sisko challenged him to say, like, hey, you could be a captain. You could be, you know, you're putting the red uniform on. Like, that's, this is what this means. Like, you're not standing behind a wooden horseshoe all day. You know, you need to, and he's basically, you know, he becomes like the captain of the Defiant, basically.
You can have a chair.
It's going to be the center chair. and we get some great scenes. I mean, I have one of my favorites is the I was gonna say throne room scene, but that's the wrong. It's a
watches Earl Grey guys can't name a Deep Space.
But
Nine.
No, the one the episode with the trial based off of when he shoots the
one with the trial. Yeah.
Yes,
the one with the Klingon lawyer. Right? That's what you're talking
rules
about.
Rules of engagement.
That's a great scene, especially the very, very end, where you know he's won his case, and you know Sisko kind of pulls him aside and just goes, like, you're dang right you don't shoot, you know, first. You know, it doesn't mean we'll always win, mm-hmm. but we're Starfleet officers. That's how we roll. And I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but
hashtag.
Yeah, it's great.
Do you think, just about this trial here, we've seen on The Next Generation how quickly Worf wants to fire phasers at something? And he's even asked at one point, like, are you going to shoot the view screen? Is it a good idea to give him a ship?
I mean, it's so overpowered, even for itself.
It has all the power.
I'm sorry, this is what Daniel's fees.
This is not.
That's the Defiant podcast. The you know, Sao Paulo 2. We'll do that later.
All right. So go on with what you're saying here, though.
But
about
Sisko is
telling
saying
him,
that, but he really pushes Worf, and I think he really makes Worf grow in a way. Whereas Picard is more walking alongside him and like, hey, I'm going to help you on this journey of discovering mm-hmm. your culture. You know, Sisko is like, I don't really care about your culture. This is the bar. I'm going to make you hit it, which is great. It's a great thing for the character.
Mm.
And I mean, that scene, I love that scene because he also talks about command that, like, Worf's like, well, I don't feel like celebrating. And Sisko's like, well, neither do I, but you're in red now and that's what we do. So get over it. You know? So, I mean, I do love that mentoring.
I mean, we know process. Worf doesn't like those functions because he's like, you know, sir, can I please be excused from, you know, Admiral Hansen's, you know, <he's> like, but yeah.
So I think I'd latch on maybe to the smaller moments. Like I said, like I really liked the beginning. I really like the whole Worf Jadzia thing. I actually feel like they were two characters developed completely independently that totally belonged together. Like it was just some crazy, you know, happenstance of what happened. And, but like that first moment that they met each other, you could just kind of tell things worked out well. And mm-hmm. like we talked about, the Worf-Odo relationship is cool and interesting because it's very adversarial at first because they're kind of similar in a lot of ways. I also really like, in the same way that Odo doesn't like Quark, but Worf hates Quark, I feel like. Because Odo pretends to not like mm-hmm. Quark, but he really likes Quark, you know what I mean? But Worf is like, he's just a dirty Ferengi, like, whatever. I like a lot of the small touches. I like a lot of the small relationship moments in Deep Space Nine that Worf develops. And, you know, it's like any character. It's not with every single person on the crew, but it's interesting to me how seamless it seemed, how very yeah. natural it seemed for mm-hmm. every single person on that station that Worf just kind of found his niche and worked it worked for me in every aspect, I think.
I mean, Daniel has that whole Dan fic about Worf and Morin's prune juice chasing and drinking. But like the whole, I mean, because remind me, because I'm doing my rewatch, but like in some ways that isolation and that struggle of Worf where he starts sleeping alone on the Defiant, like away, literally away from everyone. So like it takes a while for him to come to this new family, these new relationships. And so, I mean, I really do think it is a very interesting arc for him of he's literally separating himself.
I think one of the things that was great about it too is on Deep Space Nine, everybody's pushed and to be their best. You know, like they really are pushed. You know, Worf's pushed by Sisko. I think honestly, his relationship with Ezri in the end is really kind of what pushes him to make that decision he makes in the end about the Klingon Empire and what to do about it. You know, she gives him some tough love in a way that he's never heard. Like, this is one of the things I just love is Worf as a character is just. Everybody's kind of pushing him to be his best self. Martok does it for him. Jadzia does it for him. Sisko does it for him. Ezri does it for him. You know, all these people are kind of really trying to help mold this guy into something great. And I think that's a really cool thing for that character because a lot had happened to him on the TNG, but he hadn't moved a lot except for
his quarters are still the same.
Getting that promotion in Generations. Yeah. So I think that those relationships and what we see for him there, it's just a really neat thing. And what a great gift for, you know, Michael Dorn. You know, if he's going to come back, they actually give him some great material to work with.
So one thing I'll say about what you said, Matthew, that everyone's pushed to be their best. But I also think one difference between DS9 and TNG, the environment that Worf was put into, is that people are pushed to be their best, but they're also allowed to fail on the station. In a way that they're not allowed to fail on the Enterprise because it's a more, you know, as the station was set up to be a Wild West town, you know, it is a Federation facility, but it's not a starship. The rules are more relaxed. Sisko is more relaxed as a captain. And I think that once Worf finally realizes, maybe he doesn't realize that aspect, but he realizes that maybe this is the place for him. The environment of Deep Space Nine allows him to grow. He's not boxed in. You know, he doesn't have to be that same officer like the other officers on the ship anymore.
It's an interesting point, and I'm not even disagreeing with you. I'm thinking out loud at this point. But we get in TNG, of course, when Kalos is killed. Worf literally just immediately just goes
Kalar.
Yeah. Kalar, I'm sorry. I always get those.
When the founder of the Klingon homeworld was killed, Worf just loses his.
They're Klingons. they're Klingons. They kill their gods. Anyways, when he does that and he goes over there and he kills them, I mean,
Duras.
It's not. Of course, he gets a slap on the wrist. Technically, it's not a huge deal. He gets reprimanded or whatever. But it is looked at. You know, you were saying that he is allowed to fail in Deep Space Nine, but one episode that really sticks out to me about Worf in Deep Space Nine is the one where he goes back to save Jadzia on that jungle planet. And Sisko is like, nope, you're done. That's it. You're never going to be captain. You never get to do what we set you out to do. And again, I'm thinking out loud here, but like he faces more consequences for the action of going back to save granted the stakes were high, but to save a fellow officer than he does when he kills someone in cold blood. It's just, to me, it's like,
yeah,
it's kind of yin and yang, of course. The situations are very different, but I don't know what that is saying exactly.
Well, remember that the way that Sisko is there, I mean, that was Avery Brooks had the same tone and everything when he was talking to William Shatner at the piano. So,
but to me, that's illustrated in TNG when Worf gets upgraded by Data. You know, yes, Mr. Worf, when you were tactical officer, you could do this, but you're first officer now in that episode. And it's the same thing now. Yeah, Worf could do that when he was a lieutenant tactical, you know, department head. But he's a first officer of the Defiant now. He's a lieutenant commander. He's wearing red. Mm-hmm. He can be, you know, so there's now a higher expectation for him. So in some ways, Deep Space Nine is literally a different story for him because he's in a different position and he has to be treated differently. And I think in some ways you see him taking that long to not only fit into Deep Space Nine, but to fit into this uniform that Darren was talking about. What does it mean to be a lieutenant commander in command?
Well, and two, I mean, we see that play out, you know, in TNG and in Lessons where Picard is dealing with that he's in love with somebody who's under his command and having to deal with it. Can he send that person to die? Can he let that person die? It's something that every Starfleet commander and captain, and anybody who's in command of an away mission, anything like that, you have to be able to make that call. And the rubber man was is that he couldn't make that call. He couldn't do it for the betterment of the entire galaxy. He was willing to let, you know, maybe millions more people die for just his wife. And, you know, that's the moral dilemma of the whole episode and what it means to be a part of command. And Sisko saying you failed one of the ultimate tests of what it means to be a commander. Mm-hmm. And so right now, at least for quite a while, you're done. There's no chance of you getting your own ship. And it's an interesting lesson to actually see that played out in Star Trek, because we hadn't really seen that, you know, happen before.
Well, let's transition, because we're already talking about Jadzia a little bit here. Darren, when we left The Next Generation, we saw Worf having a romance with Counselor Troi. Now, on Deep Space Nine, he gets involved with Jadzia Dax, but you can tell there's chemistry between them from the very, very beginning. What do you think about the relationship that he had with Jadzia and him finding true love on the station?
Jorf. We don't have to mesh everyone's name together, Philip. No, I think it was a great relationship. Like Daniel said, these are two characters that were written separately and developed highly. It wasn't just like, oh, this is the pilot, and you could tell that this guy's going to be with that girl because, you know, that's the story. They actually came together in a very natural way. And when Star Trek writing, or writing in general, does something well and things come together naturally, it makes a lot of sense. So I really enjoyed the relationship, as, you know, as we've mentioned many times on Earl Grey, you know, we're sad that money was an issue back in the 90s and they couldn't have brought some of the TNG people over for their wedding. But but that aside, you know, I think, it, you know, it's good. And, you know, one of the things I was thinking today was, what if Terry Farrell had stayed through the seventh season? I mean, we were talking, you know, earlier about where Worf was left at the end of Deep Space Nine, but I mean, I think it would have been very, because that was not as much of a character decision as a, you know, fourth wall, this actress is no longer on the show, you know, we're choosing to kill her off. So, I mean, good thing they didn't do that to Beverly in season, you know, one, otherwise she never would have come back. But, you know, so that to say, I liked the relationship between him and Jadzia, but it would have been interesting to see where Worf would have been if they hadn't killed her character.
Mm-hmm. Well, and not to skip ahead, but like, to me, I thought it was interesting in season seven to, like, okay, now we have to struggle that we have a new Dax. Well, guess what? Yeah. The guy who was married to her, he has to struggle with that. And I did like the whole, like, you know, I like how they like danced around each other, and then like they really danced with each other. Boom, boom. But then it was like, yeah, we figured it out. Like, I think it took them, I don't know, you guys know, like half the season before they're like, yeah, we got it. We know you're the that and I'm that and we're over, you know, okay.
Yeah, right, yeah. So any more thoughts? We've already talked a bit about Jadzia here, but is Philip and Daniel, do you have any other thoughts on the relationship with Jadzia that we didn't cover yet?
I'm a huge Jadzia fan, like massive, super crush on Jadzia. And I love her as a character. And I actually had never thought of this, Darren, but I really would have liked to have known how they would have proceeded if, you know, Terry Farrell had decided not to leave the show. What would have happened to Worf? I mean, maybe he wouldn't have changed his course because she was so intricately involved in Klingon culture at that point anyways. Maybe it wouldn't have changed his decision to go away and be a, you know, a diplomat, but it would have been interesting. I think that would have been really cool. And like I said, it's just another in a long string of Worf can't have nice things. He just can't do it. It's not allowed for him to be happy for any length of time. And so it's maybe it's a happy coincidence that she wanted to leave the show at the time, but it really kind of follows a whole arc of his character that every time he gets comfortable, every single time he feels okay with being where he is and happy with who he is and where he is in his life, it's ripped away from him, you know, in a pretty brutal manner.
Now, Matthew and I know this. This is called a tragic character in Shakespearean construct, but we'll explain it to you guys later.
You guys in your Shakespeare stuff.
Well, I think that if you guys kind of want that answer, though, of what might have happened if Jadzia had stayed and why it worked out pretty well that, you know, when she didn't. You can just listen to our behind the scenes talks on the orb when we're doing the final arc of Deep Space Nine. I don't know. I think, Chris, we talked at length about that and what Ezri actually ends up being able to do for Worf that Jadzia never could. So there's
In that respect, yeah, I guess we have touched on that. Yeah,
we actually, I mean, I feel like we talked a lot about that. So I think that was the Deep Space Nine Raiders took lemons and just made some beautiful lemonade out of it. And so it's a real talent.
Speaking
that they have.
Let's talk about what the way it ends for Worf. I think Ezri, what we've talked about with Ezri, that she did for him that Jadzia couldn't, was key to that. I don't know that things would have ended up this way for him if Jadzia had stayed on. And that is, first of all, the influence of Martok, but also the fact that he finally kills Gowron and all the Klingons are cheering his name. Worf, everyone, Worf, let's go. Worf, 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 Worf.
I'm cheering.
What are you guys? Why aren't you cheering? Worf, 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 Worf. He can actually be the leader of the Klingon Empire. We've watched this character from the beginning of the Next Generation all the way up to here, wanting to find himself as a Klingon. He's always pursuing honor. He's pursuing his heritage as a Klingon. He can be the actual leader of a Klingon Empire. And he says, no thanks. And he gives that to Martok. It's like he went on this long journey and he finally got to the goal line and he realized that that's not the goal line. That's not what he wants anymore. And Ezri played a really big part in helping him realize that.
Well, it's because of his good relationship with Riker. He knows you always turn down the first, second, and third offer. That's all.
Right.
No. Exactly. Well, I think this is actually, to me, the most fascinating part of the Worf storyline. And this is my pitch to you. Okay, humans in Star Trek, you know, Next Generation, TOS, etc., DS9, they're supposed to be the best picture of humanity, right? And, you know, we go through the struggles, da-da-da-da. But to me, that's Worf's story. He is the best picture of what Klingons can be. Now, he comes at it from his approach of not being around Klingons and what really reads in books and these notions of honor, but he's sort of, I don't want to get too religious overtone to it, but he's almost converting Klingons to Worfism. You know, they're like, well, yeah, we get what you're saying, but that's not how we really are. But he kind of stays true to, this is my concept of Klingonhood. And the more he meets these Klingons, they're like, well, maybe you're right. Maybe we should actually stick to what we write down. Maybe we should stick to these principles. Maybe we should actually follow all these rituals and give them meaning and instead of just doing what we're doing and fighting among ourselves. And even with Martok being mentored by that, you know, he kind of mentors, reverse, you know, he kind of converts Martok to the cause. And of that Worf is sort of the best Klingon, and that, or the sort of, you know, the what they can aspire to. That's the aspiration of Klingonhood, is Worf, and that he converts people to it. And that's sort of what I see throughout the series, is that he meets all the Klingons, the real Klingons, but then he rubs off on them, they rub off on him, and then in the end, he kind of converts what Klingonhood should be.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you think of the three pivotal moments that Worf contributes to Klingon society, I'd say his interaction with the clone of Kalis and setting him up as the, was it, Emperor? You know, the taking the fall for Duras at that pivotal time, you know, where that would have split the council and really hurt the Empire. And then in the end, you know, letting the cup pass from his lips and going to and to let having Martok be the chancellor and not making himself the chancellor. Like, I mean, if you think about it, if there's the great song sung of the warrior, you know, Worf, I'm sure there are many in the Klingon, you know, council, because he actually is very pivotal on their society.
Because in putting Martok in power there, Darren, he's putting a commoner in that chair as the chancellor of the Klingon Empire, which I think is very important for helping
but
that
society. But an awesome commoner with
evolve.
One eye. I mean, that's just, you know.
Right. It's funny because I always saw it more as that what you were saying, Philip, I always saw it more as that Martok finally shows Worf what it means to be a true Klingon, like not like the fake faux Klingons we see all over the place, but Martok just is by his very nature a true Klingon. And Worf gravitates toward that, and the only thing that Worf really does is help push him to be truly honorable, which is to say, we're not going to stand for all of these lies. We're going to actually live by our code of honor and decency and those kind of things. And so that's where Worf kind of rubs off on Martok a little bit. But it's interesting to hear you talk about Worf that way and how his impact on... So it gives me a whole new perspective to think about.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the metaphor would be like organized religion, which I'm a member of organized religion, but like how some would say, you know, you get away from the principles and then it becomes all this other stuff. And then Worf has always been about what the meaning is. And so Klingon society has become about the stuff. And Worf is saying like, no, it's the beliefs. It's what we, you know, it's more than just honor, but you know, Worf has all these things. And so I think that's, he kind of wipes away all the bureaucracy of the Klingonhood and this and that and the petty stuff. And this is what we should be about. Cause even the act of not being in charge, that's not very Klingon. You kill the guy, you're in charge. That's how it works when you're
secession by assassination.
Right. The sort of, yeah, well, yeah, we're not Mary Universe quite yet, but yeah.
I think it's like a 1-2 punch of Martok and Ezri. Martok gradually helps Worf learn what it is to actually be a Klingon, because Martok is the everyday Klingon. He doesn't have royal blood. He's just a commoner. He's a normal... He's the Klingon that I always wanted to see when I said on Earl Grey that I felt like Klingons on TNG are cardboard cutouts. When you see Martok, you don't feel that way. And Worf gradually learns that from Martok. And then at the end, it takes Ezri to break the spell of the ideal Klingon Empire in Worf. And Ezri allows Worf to finally see that things don't have to be the way that they always are. And he's already been gradually getting there through his relationship with Martok. And then that all happens. He slays Gowron, and then he realizes that the goal line shifted. That's not what he's after anymore.
So is this like Troy? She actually has that one counseling moment finally?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's so cool because at that point, we were kind of talking and hinting about earlier on the other side of the orb, like reaching his goal was always to be a Klingon, a true Klingon, and to find a way to be back in that society. And once there's this moment where he's offered everything, you know, like the Holy Grail, and he's like, no, I don't, that's not for me anymore. Mm-hmm. Like he's truly come to the full understanding of who Worf is.
Right.
Not just who Worf the Klingon is, but who Worf the Klingon is, who's been raised by humans, who has Federation values and some Klingon values all put together. Like he's the synthesis of all this. Mm-hmm. So to just be the Klingon leader would not be enough. Like he wouldn't be fully Worf, and like he can let that go. And what a really awesome statement. In a world where people are completely, you know, just worried about who they are and their identities and all that and who they're going to be, to see a character come to that place and stick with who he is. Mm-hmm.
So was Riker
really awesome?
Was Riker wrong in Encounter? Is Worf really Pinocchio?
So last point that we want to cover here, now that we've gotten to the end and we know what happens with Worf at the end of the series, and I understand from Ops that Darren, your ship has been cleared for departure and they're waiting for you to close the airlock. So I want to get your thoughts on this last thing here before you head out. Worf's future beyond this, his future as an ambassador, where DS9 left the character in your eyes, what did you think about Worf when DS9 finally went dark?
I think they left him fairly well. I mean, he was, you know, he had his moment sitting at the bar of, you know, hearing My Way or whatever song it was at that time, you know, and that was good, you know, to have him with that crew, because he's part of the crew. That's his new family, you know, as it were. But then we get these moments from the movies, which is kind of strange because it's kind of putting him, as we've talked about, you know, many times before, back in that role. But I think overall, I think TNG left him well, but the movies kind of dibbled their fingers into the water, I guess, a little bit. Not quite to my liking, but again, like you've said, Chris, you have to have Worf in a TNG movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't not want him there. I wouldn't want them to be like, well, he's, you know, off doing this, so we can't bring him. It's like, no.
Sisko wouldn't let him come play with us today.
But I think they did a good job, and he was a great addition to that cast.
Yeah. Well, Darren, we're going to let you get over to your ship, so thanks for joining us today, and before you leave, tell everyone where they can find you.
Yeah, it's at Upper Pylon 3. It's the Enterprise, obviously. It loves docking at the upper pylons. No, they can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, and of course listen to me, Philip, and Daniel on Earl Grey on Trek FM.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for dropping by.
You're welcome. Kapla.
So Philip and Daniel, same topic here, seeing Worf at the end of the series where they left the character. Daniel, what did you think? How did you feel?
I've never heard really many people talk about this, but I feel like, and I don't know if they did it consciously or not, but I feel like they left him in a very similar place than kind of what we see in All Good Things. Like, he's a high-ranking Klingon official, and he's successful or whatever. You know, that's where he's going off to do. Of course, we don't know what happens in the future. I don't know. I'm torn. I'm torn whether or not... Like, there's all these rumors and stuff about a Captain Worf show, and I don't know that I would really be interested in Captain Worf. But on the other hand, I'm not interested in Ambassador Worf either. I don't know what's a better place to leave Worf, but I actually think this is probably the best that you can do. He's such a complex and interesting character with lots of moving parts that I don't know what makes the most sense for him. But I like where Deep Space Nine leaves him. I'm totally fine with it. I don't have any problems with it. And like Darren said, Insurrection kind of, and then Nemesis kind of leaves him in murky waters because where does that, I don't understand. How is he back in a uniform? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. How about you, Philip?
Well, if Energy Ball Wesley can still be in uniform in Nemesis.
Energy Ball Wesley.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard him called that before, but that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I think
Leffler called him that, but that was off camera.
So. Ooh.
I'm not going to touch that one.
But Leffler did.
That's what she said.
I think my struggle with Worf is, where does he end up? And because this is the answer. Like, does he end up in Klingon? Or does he end up in Federation? Like, that's the choice, right? Because we've seen him in Starfleet, obviously, this whole time. You know, obviously he's interactive with the Klingons. But Deep Space, you know, What You Leave Behind says, well, now he's going to be a Klingon. You know, he's going to go into the Klingon Empire now. And even All Good Things says that's where he's going to be. And maybe, like, you know, kind of like Riker talking about Troy and All Good Things, you know, I always assumed in the end, you know, Worf would be in the Klingon Empire. You know, is that what we're thinking? That he's just buying time, having Starfleet adventures, but we all know he's going to go with the Empire eventually. Like, do we? And like you said, Daniel, or do we think maybe he will be Captain Worf? You know, maybe he can be a bad Admiral too, right? So I don't know. I mean, no, I think with the last episode of Deep Space Nine, I don't think it's like out of left field, to use a Sisko phrase, but it is sort of like, he kills Gowron and Martok's in charge and you're an ambassador now and roll credits. It's like, okay. I mean, that makes sense, but it's a little fast. Okay.
It didn't quite happen that way, Philip.
Well, I mean, like, asking him to be an ambassador happened in, like, the last 15 minutes, right?
A lot happened at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm saying, so that's where, like, it's like, okay. I mean, it makes sense, but it's sort of a lot to take in, and, like, that's where they leave the character. And so, I do think Nemesis does a disservice by not, you know, by the one line, oh, I got tired of being a diplomat. That's not an explanation. I mean, because you're basically like Sarek, you know, you're ambassador, you know, from the Klingon Empire. That's a pretty huge position. I mean, and you outrank Picard basically to some extent. I like where to answer the question. Yes, I like where Deep Space Nine left him, and I think Nemesis did a disservice. And I guess, like Daniel, I struggle with, where should he end up? Do I want him to be Captain Worf? Do I want him to be Ambassador Worf in the Klingon Empire? I don't know. Much like Worf himself, I don't know where he belongs.
Mm-hmm.
I think he, one of the coolest parts of having him be ambassador was, you know, he's going to be the Federation ambassador to Kronos. And so he's representing the Federation, but to the Klingon people. And I think that that is just an awesome place to leave him because, two, he's going to be part of a very different Klingon Empire that's going to be led by Martok, which is going to face a lot of resistance. They pick up on this in the novels that a lot of people don't like Martok because he's not the prototypical Klingon leader and everything. And so I think it just story-wise, I'm thinking of all the different ways that you can really go with that. And so he could be a part of a Klingon Empire, which he could have more respect for and be behind because it's with Martok, somebody he really, you know, has a good relationship with and trusts and thinks highly of. You know, finally a leader in the Klingon Empire you can think highly of because they didn't get there by, you know, underhanded means or anything like that. So it is a really interesting place. And then, of course, even the novels, they have to play with what canon is, and that's what's on screen. And on screen, Nemesis has Worf back on the Enterprise, and at least they make him first officer, so he becomes number one on Picard's Enterprise, and at least that's interesting because they are going to move then towards Worf having his own ship one day, hopefully. But yeah, I felt like the leaving him as an ambassador created a whole new storyline, and it was interesting because TNG ends up with everybody in their same place. Deep Space Nine ends with everybody going out and moving away from the station in almost a very realistic way. Like, you know, we've been doing these jobs for so long and we move on. We're in the military, basically. We're in Starfleet. That's what happens. We don't stay at the same post forever.
Until at the TOS.
Yeah, exactly. Or even TNG, you know.
Well, TNG finally gets there, but it takes them four movies to finally
it takes
let
them a very long time. But
I
think it's a great place to leave the character, but I don't think of necessarily just where they leave the character as, okay, what he's going to go do. I just think of the personality of the character. You know, Worf is a deeper, richer, more dynamic character, to use a literary term. Like, he has become a very dynamic character where before he was pretty static. And to me, that's the brilliance of having him come on the show and putting him in this with this writing staff. They just make Worf who I always think of him as, you know, because I don't think of Worf as TNG Worf. I always end up thinking of him as the dynamic, like, man who is at the end of Deep Space Nine and all that he's become and all that's happened to him. So, but that can't happen without him being on TNG first and a lot of the things they do with the Klingons. So can't disrespect the work that they put into creating the Klingon culture, making Worf a part of that, and they just get to further those adventures on Deep Space Nine.
I think of him as Star Trek Worf.
See, I always think of Bashir as a TNG from Birthright Part 1, so that's just me.
And, you know, Tom Paris, I mean, I always think of him as Nick Locarno.
Nick Locarno, that's true.
Yeah,
and his dad does too, because he's got a picture of Nick Locarno on his desk in Pathfinder. Yeah.
His dad can't even get it right.
Oh, Nick, my favorite son.
Oh, yeah. All right. But yeah, I mean, Worf is a great character because, unlike Miles O'Brien coming over from TNG, O'Brien was very much just, he's a member of the crew, but he wasn't a lead. Whereas for many people, Worf was their favorite character on TNG. And now here he is on DS9. And so he's unique in that we get to follow this one character from the very beginning of TNG all the way to the very end of DS9. And I think that, you know, as a result, and of course as a result of Michael Dorn's wonderful portrayal of him, he's one of the very richest characters. And not just because he was on screen for the longest, but because of the fact they really evolved this character over time. Well, guys, thanks for coming by today to talk about Worf. I am sorry that one of your crewmates, I don't know what you guys did to him. You told him you can't come back to the Enterprise with us. You've got to go get on that other ship and go off. I don't know what that's about. And so I'm just going to leave that amongst you guys.
Chris, we're in our second season. Losses were inevitable.
He was the season one doctor. So you don't have anything to worry about. Yeah.
Whoa, I hope you don't bring on the Pulaski then.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, is Pulaski going to come on and be your third chair for the next year on Earl Grey?
Yeah, we'll figure it out, I guess.
Wow. I'm expecting some pretty grouchy shows from you guys. But yeah, thanks for dropping by today. So before we go, Daniel, tell everyone where they can find you.
Well, obviously they can find me with Darren and Philip here on Earl Grey every week talking about TNG. And you can also find me on Twitter. My handle is at OneUpDan, and that is the number one, not the word.
Awesome. How about you, Philip?
They can find me on Twitter as well, and also, of course, with these folks on Earl Grey. And my handle on Twitter is NC Public Servant. That's NC, like not Klingon. But it's with a C. It's a different planet. You wouldn't understand.
Great. All right. Well, thanks again, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Well, Matthew, now's the part where I would normally say Worf isn't the only thing we've been talking about on the network this past week, but actually, we've been talking about Worf quite a bit. In fact, just before we recorded this show, we recorded an Earl Grey with the guys talking about Worf on TNG from our perspective as Niners. So everyone, be sure and go check out that episode of Earl Grey as well. That would be Earl Grey episode 56. But we have been talking about some other things besides Worf this week on the network. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Also, I never know whether it's pronounced Babel or Babel, so I always feel scared to talk about it.
That you don't want to bring it up in polite conversation.
Yeah. Journey to Boone. You know.
You know, journey to journey.
Yeah.
Journey to the center
to,
of the earth.
To the journey, yes.
Earl Grey.
Patrick Stewart said, look, we can have that scene where Worf explains why he's in the movie, or we can have my Mambo scene, but we can't have both. So
the orb.
He just completely sells it, and he is Benjamin Sisko by this point. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Well, he better be Benjamin Sisko by this point, yeah. Matthew. There's only one episode left in the series.
This is true. This is true.
To the journey!
And this is, I would dare even say, when he starts falling in love with Captain Janeway. This is the road that leads to the bathtub. From this point forward, he is just ever so slowly falling for her. And the monkey.
Warp 5.
They were just like, okay, we know this is the end. So screw it. We're just going to do whatever the hell we want. And putting Shatner in there, it's just like, why not? Who cares?
The Ready Room.
Also, one other thing it reminded me of, when they're in space, the escape pod that Trip and Kaitama use, did that not look to you guys like the ship from Pigs in Space without the engines?
Yes! Oh my gosh, you're right! You're absolutely right!
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
There are two notes that I seriously made. There were two notes that I made.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is, I love Riker's TV. I question what he's watching.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Wise, if he's on the bridge of the Voyager, he's not even back at Harry Kim's station, right? He's one of the extras in the background who has to stand because he doesn't even have a chair.
Literary Treks.
You're waiting for one of the core cast of Vanguard to show up in these books. You're going to be waiting a long time. Because as long as the three of us have anything to say about it, it ain't going to happen.
Continuing mission.
The big thing here is I did it all for the cost of 3DS Max, which I bought with an educational discount. So like $300.
I don't think you can get an educational discount on materials to build an actual set, can you?
Axanar, the official podcast.
When I learned the concept behind Prelude to Axanar that was going to be a History Channel-style documentary, I got so excited. Like, my favorite Star Trek book ever is David Goodman's Federation, the first 150 years, because I just love... it's a history book.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere that you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That's one way that you can help us make sure that other Star Trek fans can find the orb as they search iTunes. You can do that in the iTunes application on your desktop or in the podcasts app on your iPhone or your iPad. Of course, you can just stream the shows through those pieces of software. But if you click subscribe, that makes a difference in how we place in search rankings. Also, another thing that makes a difference are star ratings and written reviews. So while you're there, please take a moment and rate the show, leave us a star rating, leave us a written review. We love to know what you think about the show, and that also helps us rise up because those three things, subscriptions, star ratings, and written reviews, are big factors in how the iTunes search engine works. So we really thank you for your help there. Now, if you're not an Apple user, because we know that not everyone uses Apple products, we've got you covered as well. We are in lots of different places that you can access through Android, through Windows Phone, BlackBerry, whatever it is that you have. You can find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone Directory, that also feeds Xbox. You can find us on BlackBerry as well. And you can go to the website. You can stream from the webpage. You can even download the MP3 file. You do that through the SoundCloud player that you'll see under the thumbnail artwork. So when you see that, look in the right-hand corner, upper right corner, and you'll see a download icon there. And you can also grab the RSS feed from that page and pop that into any application that you like. Another way that you can help us keep Star Trek Talk coming to you every week and every day is to become a patron of the network through Patreon. Patreon is a lot like Kickstarter, except instead of a single project, it's a way for you to support the creatives that you love on a month-to-month basis. If you go to our page at patreon.com/trekafilm, that's patreon.com/trekafilm, you'll see our current goals, you'll see milestone contribution levels, and all the perks that we have in exchange for your support. You can set any amount that you would like to contribute on a monthly basis, but we have outlined some milestones and given you different perks for those different levels. And we have a lot of different perks. Of course, we have things like digital wallpapers, but we also have kind of unique things like a chance to be part of our content development team that's actually in our project management system for the entire network. You can be a producer. We have three associate producers here on the Orb right now, Norman C. Lau, Ruth Ward, and Lisa Stevens. And we really, really thank them for their support. And they're also helping us create content, you know, come up with ideas for the show. And it's great to have their input. And I hope that you'll join us as well, because I would love to hear from you. And, you know, you can send us in ideas, of course, but you can also be part of our team in our project management system if you check out Patreon. So go and look and see what we have there. We have, you know, chances for you to sit in on the show recording as well, if that's something that you would like to do. We need your support to keep going, but we want you to be part of the team and part of the crew. So you'll find all of that at patreon.com/trekafilm, and we really thank you for all of your support. All right, Matthew, when you're not trying to figure out what to do with Worf's big candle collection that he left behind when he left the station, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'd love to talk about Deep Space Nine or anything else you'd like to talk about, so just give me an at reply. Let me know you're following me, and hopefully we'll just have a great conversation. And, of course, you can find me on Literary Treks, where we're talking about books and comics of Star Trek. So if you kind of want to hear more about what happens to Worf, follow us there. We'll find it out with you in the novels and in the comics.
Especially that comic where he's like Worf and the Barbarian.
Exactly. Because that's really the best step. I mean, that's what we want to see from Worf.
It's like, that's not what we expected him to be doing after he left the station.
Worf, put your shirt on. And then, of course, you can find me at my own personal blog, 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not just hanging out with Worf and one of his calisthenics programs without your shirt on, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/C. Brian Jones. And, of course, I hang out there in the Babel Conference. Our group, it's a closed group on Facebook, which is a replacement for our forums that used to be on our website. If you'd like to join us there, Matthew and I would love to talk to you. Just go over to Facebook and type The Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search bar. That'll take you right over there. Or go to our website and click discussion on the menu bar. That will take you there as well. Just click the join button. I'll let you into the group, and I hope you'll come join in all the great conversation that we're having there. As for shows, elsewhere on the network, of course, I do Literary Treks with Matthew, as he mentioned. And beyond that, I do a lot of other shows as well. There's Warp 5, Continuing Mission, Matter Stream, The Ready Room, Hyper Channel, and I co-host the official podcast of Star Trek Axanar with Axanar creator and executive producer Alec Peters. So those are some other places you can find me if you want to hear my other thoughts on Star Trek. If you'd like to contact the network or send Matthew and me communications by email or voicemail, there are ways that you can do that. Go to our website at trek.fm/contact. You'll find a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to both of us by email. You can also send us a voicemail. In the left sidebar, there is a little item for that. Or just go to speakpipe.com/trekafilm. That's the word speak and the word pipe. And you can record a message for us just using the microphone in your webcam or your smartphone or your tablet, and you can upload it to us as an MP3 file right there from the page. On Twitter, you'll find us at TrekFM. And of course, I mentioned the Babel Conference already on Facebook. We also have our just main brand page there on Facebook as well at facebook.com/TrekFM. Before we let you go, we would like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. They're the best source for audiobooks that you'll find anywhere and one of my favorite services ever. I've been a customer for, it's actually going on 15 years now. Very hard for me to believe. They have kept me sane over the years as I've had some really long commutes. Audible is a great way for you to pass that time with wonderful audiobooks. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get an audiobook of your choice absolutely free just for trying Audible. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. If you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose. You'll get to keep that book. But if you love podcasts, I know you're going to love Audible. So try them out. audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. And also, go check out Enterprise in Space. This is a really interesting project that Larry Nemechek and I are both involved in. And it's a project of the nonprofit National Space Society that will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter and return the craft to Earth. The orbiter will be named the NSS Enterprise, and it will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space, and then, of course, those will be returned to Earth, and the ship will be put in a museum afterwards. And you can help make it happen. You can fly your name into space, you can help science education, which is something extremely important to me, children's education and science education. And you can find out everything you need to know about it by going to enterpriseinspace.org. And there's a video there. There's all sorts of information. You can find out how you can donate, how you can get your name on a chip that will fly into space as well. You're a virtual crew member on the NSS Enterprise. So go check out all that information at enterpriseinspace.org. And I hope you can support us as we work to build an enterprise that will actually go into space.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.